This influenza podcast series was recorded between July and December 2022, reflecting guidance for the 2022 to 2023 flu season. The general principles will still be relevant, but for exact information reflecting the latest guidance for 2023 to 2024, please go to the influenza e-learning modules on the RCGP e-learning site.
Welcome to this RCGP podcast on influenza vaccine and surveillance in 2022-23. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, GP and Deputy Medical Director for e-learning at the RCGP. Today, I'll be talking to Professor Simon DeLucenen, Director of the RCGP's Research and Surveillance Centre, the RSC. Simon is a senior academic GP with interests to do with the use of routine data for surveillance, and it is thanks to the RSC that we know when flu is circulating. Thank you for joining us today, Simon.
You're very welcome. I'm delighted to take this opportunity not only to thank the general practitioners who shared data with the RSC. We've had this fantastic expansion over the pandemic with nearly a third of GPs in England now sharing data with us. I'm also delighted to have the opportunity to talk about influenza and the importance of having your flu jab.
So let's start with that. Let's start by talking about this year's flu vaccination season. There are other podcasts and an e-learning module discussing the perennial issue of who gets which vaccine and why, but I'd be interested to know your thoughts on uptake. It might be too early to be certain, but what do we think uptake's going to be like this year?
Well, as dare I say, as ever in general practice, we're doing a fantastic job with flu vaccination, and we mustn't forget that we are one of the best in Europe. I've got data to the end of September, and already practices have done nearly 21% of people over 65, risk groups about 7% vaccinated, 5% of pregnant women, and around 9 to 10% of those in clinical risk groups. And these are typical for vaccination getting going, because it's usually late September that, or mid to late September, that practices get their delivery of flu vaccine. So it looks like we're on target for another, compared with many other countries, exceptional performance at flu vaccination. There's no signs of any increased hesitancy related to COVID vaccination. And if I were to set a challenge to myself, my practice, as well as our colleagues, it would be, can we really increase the proportion of pregnant women who are vaccinated? And also for those of us who are healthcare workers to also get vaccinated.
Yes, absolutely. I have had an awful lot of discussion with pregnant women around flu and COVID vaccines. So some vaccinations which we give, for example, MMR, are the same year in and year out, but flu is different. We base the strains of the flu vaccination on what we think will be the circulating strains this year, and at least partly on what the main strains were in the Southern Hemisphere flu season, which happened 6 months or so before ours. Was there much flu in Australia 6 months ago, or did social distancing wipe it all out?
Okay, well, there's undoubtedly been a huge reduction in influenza and other infections through the COVID pandemic, with social distancing, lockdowns, etc. And flu was no exception. So 2020 and 21 seasons had very low incidence of influenza. But it's definitely bounced back in 2022, though many things are not completely back to their pre-pandemic levels. But within the Southern Hemisphere, and particularly in Australia, there was some concern earlier in the year because there was a higher incidence of flu in May and June, picked up through their surveillance networks, compared with 4 or 5 previous years' data they displayed at the same time. However, despite this higher level of influenza, hospital admissions in Australia for influenza have been lower than in previous years. And also the circulating viruses identified appear to be similar to the viruses used to create the vaccine, suggesting reasonable vaccine effectiveness. So after initial concerns, I think that our current thinking is there will be a good vaccine effectiveness, though we might see a reasonably high incidence of influenza within the community.
That's good to know that hopefully the vaccine will work reasonably well. So following on from that, we now use a quadrivalent vaccine rather than a trivalent one. Could you explain why we do that?
So historically, or even up to recent years, we would use a trivalent vaccine. A trivalent vaccine has two influenza A strains of viruses is active and one B variant. And as A tends to cause more serious disease than B, this is the way things were organized. But every third year or so, the B strain will change. So having a quadrivalent with two influenza A's and two influenza B's give us better chance of matching the vaccine to whatever might be the circulating strain. There's also some evidence that quadrivalent is more effective in under 65-year-olds and in risk groups. And the UK's Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisations, the JCVI, advises the use of quadrivalent based on cell culture and recombinant in people in this age group. This is now recommended ahead of the quadrivalent that's built on, that's been manufactured on egg culture. For people who are 65 years and over, then an adjuvanted quadrivalent, that's a quadrivalent with an extra chemical added to make it more immunologically reactive, or a high dose is used in those aged 65 and older. However, if for any reason that isn't available, then using the ordinary quadrivalent is fine. Although, in addition, as an alternative to the adjuvanted, there is a high dose proved quadrivalent vaccine that just has a bigger dose of the inactivated flu viruses. That's not currently available in the UK, but might be things that we see pop up in future years.
Well, we might be back next year asking you if that one's available now in the future. So moving on, could you tell us a bit about the work of the RCGP Research and Surveillance Centre, the RSC?
The key role of the RSC is what's called sentinel surveillance. Sentinel in the sense of being a sentry, someone who looks out for things that are happening. And I'll describe the RSC in more detail. Its full name is the RCGP's Research and Surveillance Centre, and the RSC is one of Europe's oldest sentinel systems. We've been collecting data for research and infectious disease surveillance for over 55 years. And as I've already said, the sentinel means that we're someone who's watching out, in our case, for infectious disease, primarily respiratory infectious disease, but we also look at other conditions. And we're also very, very interested in whether vaccines, particularly influenza and COVID vaccines, are effective. Our surveillance system is for what we expect, as well as the unexpected. And COVID, in fact, came as an unexpected. We've had to look at, we've also been looking at monkeypox and adenovirus associated with hepatitis. So we have this mixture of things in which we're involved. To be effective as a sentinel system, the RSC needs to link health data, primarily GP data and laboratory data. Our health data mainly comes from general practice, from our computerized record systems. And we're fantastic as a profession at recording data well. So the GP data tells us about respiratory illnesses, including influenza-like illness. GP data is also the primary source of information about vaccination, particular whether patients have had influenza vaccine. We also provide information about primary care management, including the use of antibiotics and antiviral medicines, again, particularly in respiratory illnesses. We're very lucky in the UK because of having an NHS number, and we pseudonymise the NHS number so that we can link at the individual level primary care data to hospitalisation and death data. This means that we can look at the people who present to primary care with a flu-like illness, and we can compare, for example, the vaccinated and unvaccinated, and look at rates of hospitalisation, intensive care admission, and death. But we also collect samples, which are analysed by UK HSA, the UK Health Security Agency. We take two types of samples. We take virology swabs from people who might have flu, COVID, or other respiratory illnesses. And these virology swabs, like have been extensively used in COVID, go off to the UK HSA's reference laboratory so that we can precisely identify the viruses responsible. And these viruses are studied in enormous detail, right down to their genetic sequencing. Secondly, RSC practices also provide serology samples. This involves patients when they're having a blood test, giving an extra blotter of blood. And this serology enables us to know what viruses are circulating and levels of background immunity. It was, for example, very important in showing how in the immunocompromised that COVID vaccine immunity waned reasonably quickly. So in summary, our core work is that of sentinel surveillance. We were one of the first groups to report disparities in COVID infections by age, by gender and ethnicity. We also played a key role in reporting the excess mortality in the first wave of COVID, as well as about COVID and flu vaccine uptake and effectiveness. And I've alluded to this already, but very important was us showing that COVID-19 antibodies were waning more rapidly in some risk groups was also important and led to early boosters being given to these people at risk, particularly those in the immunocompromised group.
I find it really interesting to know how this work that you do actually affects practice on a day-to-day basis and affects things like knowing when to give boosters. And I'm quite excited that my practice is in the process of signing up to participate in flu sampling for the RSC. Could you fill our listeners in on what this involves so they just can decide if they would also like to participate?
Well, firstly, we want to give a big cheer that your practice is joining the network, and we're delighted if anyone listening would like to join too. Within our network, what is really important, we're particularly keen to have more of, is sampling practices. What we need practices to do is collect samples from people with any acute respiratory illness that had its onset in the last 7 to 10 days. So any acute respiratory illness, or we tend to say ARI, so any ARI, and we don't mind whether that's an ERTI, an upper respiratory infection, a LERTI, a lower respiratory infection, or an influenza-like illness. We like in the problem field for the clinician assessing the patient to be as specific as possible. For example, if they think it's acute bronchitis or bronchiolitis. And particularly important is if a GP thinks that the patient has an influenza-like illness, please record the problem title as ILI, influenza-like illness. We have three sampling pathways for virology sampling. You might be seeing a patient yourself, and if they've got an acute respiratory illness, they're a case of ARI, then you can take the virology samples, a nose and a throat swab, yourself in the practice. We also have an arrangement where if you're speaking to people on the phone, that you can order a test kit that is sent to the patient's home. We work with a charity that sends out these kits for us. The third option for when people contact us is that you can ask them to collect the test kit from the surgery, you fill in the form that goes with the kit, put it out for them, and they simply do the sample themselves. Going on a little bit about the importance of coding, it is very, very important from our point of view that where someone has an acute respiratory infection, that is coded as a problem. The RSC can do much more with data where there is a good level of coding and labelling the problem titles with what on the balance of probabilities the GP thinks the diagnosis is. In the old days when the network was much smaller, you could perhaps always tell when you were speaking to someone from a RSC practice because they would use the code for ILI, influenza-like illness, and record this regularly. I'm really very keen for anyone in primary care when they see this, see an influenza-like illness case, to code it. The ILI signal in the swine flu pandemic from clinical recording in the RSC was what flagged the start of the swine flu pandemic out of season ahead of the virology. Consistency around coding ILI is important. And I'm just going to briefly give the RSC's ILI definition. So what we consider an influenza-like illness is an illness that's had a sudden onset. There's either a measured or a plausible temperature of 38 degrees or more. There is some sort of systemic symptoms that might be feeling hot or shivery, or that they have myalgia or headache. And there's very often a cough or some respiratory symptoms that may either affect the upper or the lower respiratory tract or the whole respiratory tract. And obviously, you use the ILI title in those circumstances where there isn't a more plausible diagnosis. If practices do get involved in our sampling, the sampling is funded. So we cover practice time in taking samples. And there's really at the moment no limit to how many practices we could take on board to get involved in sampling for the RSC. So if this strikes a chord with you and wanting to get involved, then please do contact the RSC. There's an email that we'll distribute with the information about the podcast. Otherwise, it's practiceinquiries@phc.ox.ac.uk. And we'd be happy to either answer any further questions or speak or visit practices who are interested in being involved with the RSC.
Thank you very much. I think that's all we've got time for today. I'll just repeat that email if anyone was scrabbling for a pen when they heard it. It's practiceinquiries@phc.ox.ac.uk. So if you are interested in signing up to be a sampling practice, please do email and get involved. I'd like to say a big thank you to Professor Simon de Lucenen for joining us to discuss the flu vaccination season and surveillance. Thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please do have a look at the e-learning website to find others on a variety of subjects. Goodbye.